This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week we want to welcome our newest friend of the Magic Word, Mr. John Custer from Michigan. Thanks a lot, John, for your donation, and much appreciated, and it helps keep the Magic Word podcast on the air and free to the rest of the world. We appreciate you joining and becoming a friend of the Magic Word, and for the rest of you who may be interested and able to give us a financial donation or a monthly pledge, please go to themagicword.com. I should say themagicwordpodcast.com. I should know better now, by now, shouldn't I? You should go to themagicwordpodcast.com, and you will find a tab there where you can learn about becoming a friend of the Magic Word. Your financial support really does help. Also, you know what really helps? That is if you could go to iTunes and give us just a 5-star comment. If you'll just do that, that helps us move up in the rankings. And we have been moving up quite nicely in quite a number of countries outside of the U.S. as well, because we are being listened to everywhere from Afghanistan to Zambia. It's just amazing from A to Z. So thank you all very much for tuning in each week. And also for those who have been registering for the contests we have. This last week, we started a new contest for a copy of Grandpa Magic by Alan Kronzik. But 2 weeks ago, had a prize of The Magic Graveyard written by Al the Only. And today, we're going to release the winner's name of that contest. And the winner's name is going to be told at the end of this podcast. So be sure to listen until the very end, in which we will announce that person's name. Also be sure, of course, then to subscribe to our pod letter. There you'll be the first to know about our contest, and that way you won't miss a thing. And you will also find out who wins these contests. Also, it tells you who's coming up this week, next week, and some suggestions from the archives. And if you will go to themagicwordpodcast.com, there is so much other content that is available on the website. And I probably spend an equal amount of time, if not more, actually, in putting that whole page together, each individual week's blog that has information about the guest that week, including some videos, also some photos, and a little blurb about them. And of course, if we have a contest, you can register there. But again, I suggest that you go there. And a recent thing we started doing is to add video content to the podcast. So if you prefer to watch these or have them on the background or watch them on your phone or other smart device or however that you might watch them, they are available on YouTube. And we have that video link that is on the page for themagicwordpodcast.com. All right, enough of all that. Let's move on to the introduction of this week's guest. Mr. Jeff Bibbick, who is known as the Amazing Bibbick, is the bar magician who works at Chicago Magic Lounge. He's been there for quite some time, and prior to that, he has worked in numerous restaurants doing corporate events as well, and stand-up comedy, and is just a very funny guy, and has found his real niche in life, I think, as being a bar magician, and there is no more perfect place than where he holds court on a regular basis there at the Chicago Magic Lounge. If you haven't had a chance to visit the lounge, I suggest you go and do it. Bring your friends and prepare to laugh and have a lot of fun. Jeff is a great guy. I've known him for so many years since he was back in Michigan, and he had worked with Al the Only at restaurant Carlos and Charlie's there. Anyhow, I'm not going to spoil all this. I'm going to let this unfold and let you enjoy this. So please welcome my guest this week, the Amazing Bibbick, here on The Magic Word. Today I have with me a good friend from Chicago, someone actually who was born in Detroit, Michigan, and perhaps that's kind of how I got to know him, because he was a restaurant magician performing at a lot of restaurants back in the day, along with Al the Only, and kind of I'd gotten to know these guys, and then he got more involved then in Chicago. He goes to Abbott's on a regular basis, as Abbott's get-together, I should say, as opposed to the Abbott's Magic Factory. So he has been attending Abbott's since 1974, been around for a long time, graduated from Eastern Michigan, where he was working, had a degree in speech and in theater, which certainly helps a lot when you're going to be a magician. That's a good background to have, certainly. And after that, he went on a lot of school tours across the Midwest. He'd worked in amusement parks. He's worked on cruise ships, resorts. He's, of course, done trade shows, corporate work, banquets, hospitality suites, cocktail parties, like most of us a lot. And one thing he has done that I haven't done is he's been on a USO tour, which I thought was pretty cool, back in 2013. And he circled the globe in 11 days. And I think we might get around to talk a little bit about that then, too. He is an additional, he is a hypnotist. There, again, that's another area I haven't gotten into. So I don't know. I know a little bit about that, but I really am not a certified hypnotist nor tried to do a hip show. I've looked into it a little bit, but never really done that. He is a hypnotist. As I said, he's been doing a lot of work in restaurants, which led him eventually to work at the Chicago Magic Lounge, where he is the resident magician then right now, which I think is pretty darn cool. If you guys haven't been to the Magic Lounge, you need to get to Chicago, because that is a great venue, certainly. And Joey Cranford did a great job. He had an original place, then had and it was so successful, they then built a place specifically for magic. And this is the way that magic should be presented, in the Chicago style. Well, I say Chicago style because Chicago style, I believe, is where you actually sit down at the table and then they come and join. We'll talk about that a little bit then, too. So please welcome my friend from Chicago, Mr. Jeff, the amazing Jeff Bibick.
Hey there, Jeff. Thank you very much, Scott. Great to be here. Welcome to Chicago on the first day of spring.
First day of spring. That's right. Yeah, we are here. We're recording this here on March the 20th, which is the first official first day of spring. Mm-hmm. Then, yeah, that's right. You have a magic bar in your basement. Now, that's a cool thing I think about Illinois. I'm from Illinois originally, and I know we have basements there. In Texas, we don't. So that's in your basement then right now where we're recording this?
Yes, it is. We bought this house, it's been a while, 1998. And one of the reasons we bought it is because... one of the reasons I wanted to buy it is because of this knotty pine basement that existed. So probably sometime in the 50s or the 60s, this was built. It's got, as you can see, plenty of great shelving and great knotty pine along the walls. There are a couple of special tiles into the floor, including a fan of cards. And once I saw that fan of cards on the floor, I said, this is the house for us.
It's got your name written all over it, basically.
Indeed, yes. Uh-huh. Yep. The only thing we're missing is a shuffleboard court in the tiles.
Well, that would kind of harken back to the days of the cruise ships. And
well, that's true. My cousins had a shuffleboard court in their basements.
Did they really? Wow. Yeah. Now, was the bar already built there, or did you build that?
No, it was already here.
Uh-huh.
So great shelves, but that made a great place to put my collection of magic-related stuff.
Have you got some pictures and things like with Marshall Brodeen and Jay Marshall and all those guys?
Maybe not so much in that way. I don't really – I mean, I've got a few of those things, but I don't really collect in that way. I started collecting things. Maybe I can bring the camera a little bit closer. I started collecting products that were either named a magic name or promoted in a magic way. So all the things you see behind me are vintage items that are magic polish, magic. Well, I've got a bunch of things, and maybe we could peek at them in a minute. That's the kind of stuff I look for.
Yeah, when I moved into my house in Omaha, we had a basement, and it had a bay window upstairs, and the way they had built that downstairs made for a bay window area, if you will, in the basement. Mm-hmm. So I had like a rounded alcove kind of an area that I built a close-up table and everything.
Oh, nice.
And then I put some curtains in front of it, so that way, and then behind it, so whenever I had guests over, I actually had my own close-up parlor, kind of built in for about a half dozen people to view that kind of worked in. So yeah, it'd be kind of an interesting thing. So when you were working in restaurants before, I remember Max and Irma's was a place that Al the Only worked. Is that a place where you had worked also?
Or not Max and Irma's, Carlos Murphy's.
Carlos Murphy's, okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was also Max and Irma's, I believe that was more of a Chicago thing, actually. In Detroit, there was Carlos Murphy's, and yes, we
was that a Mexican restaurant?
Pardon me?
Was it Mexican restaurant?
Yes, Irish-Mexican restaurant.
Irish-Mexican.
Yes, was their tag. And that was a great place. It was a very big place, and Al started doing it, I don't know, one or two nights a week, and then suddenly they wanted to go with 7 days a week, so he called me up and said, hey, come on in. So it was great for, every night of the week, they had magic there.
Well, Detroit's really a great area for a lot of magicians who have come from that area. Mm-hmm. You and Al and Jeff Hobson, and I believe, didn't Kevin James come from up in that area too?
Yes, from Michigan. Well, he was more from Western Michigan, but yeah.
Yeah. Who else was up in that neck of the woods?
Well, Carol Fox. He was, of course, the big guy around town. Milt Cort, for any of you who may know that name.
Yeah.
Claire Cummings was Milky the Clown in Detroit for a long time. So they had quite a Roy Kissel had a magic shop in Detroit. He was good friends with Carol.
Yeah.
Let's see. My first magic shop was Romig's Magic Shop on 9 Mile in Ferndale in Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. My brother took me there, I think, in the 8th grade, and bought a couple of things and kept going back there ever since. And so there's a lot of magic in Detroit. Good magic town.
When you got involved with magic then to begin with, was it really through the magic shop? Did you happen to, was there a trick that impressed you? SpongeBalls kind of did it for me, I guess. I remember actually before I even went to my first magic shop, now that I'm thinking about that, I think I was at a ski resort in Wisconsin, and there was somebody who came over and sat at our table. Again, kind of like they do in Chicago style magic, where they come and sit at your table as opposed to standing and walking around, and a guy sat down, and the only thing I remember is doing sponge rabbits, and I've never seen anything like that before. And I just kind of like, what the heck was this?
I believe but, yeah, sponge rabbits is the greatest close-up trick there is.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to follow up with anything after that.
Yep. If I could only do two tricks, they'd be sponge rabbit and invisible deck.
Invisible deck took the words out of my mouth. I was just talking with someone who was a magic dealer, and he was talking about how important it was. Scott Hollingsworth, I believe it was, when he was working at the magic shop here in Houston. And he was saying, I would never sell a beginner an invisible deck first time around, because once they've got that, that's the ultimate trick. That's the only trick they need. You need to teach them other things, and then the invisible deck, if you want to bring them back, have them come back, you know. That is great. So are those two things at the Chicago Magic Lounge are kind of like your go-to tricks?
Well, certainly the bunnies. I have a whole routine that's kind of evolved naturally with the bunnies. And I brought them out one time, and I started doing a little goofy song. And so that really caught on, and now it's developed to where I can get the whole bar singing this stupid little song. So that's a lot of fun. It's a great bit.
There was a routine I recall, and my mind just went completely blank. He was over in New Mexico, and he was an underground magician, friend of Roger Klaus's. Somebody's going to... tell me who this is perhaps later, but the point is he had a great lecture, some great lecture notes, and he talked about a really interesting routine for sponge bunnies. And I hadn't realized or hadn't thought about that, but male rabbits are called bucks. So he involved dollars and bucks and things with this routine. Kind of interesting.
Hair-raising.
Before we get into the Magic Lounge and kind of leading up to that, I know, again, like I said, you had been you were in Michigan, and you were working really with the after you were doing the theater and speech major in college. Did you do some restaurants at the time, or were you doing magic at the time?
Oh yes, I was doing magic. I was doing restaurants all the way along. I think that Carlos Murphy started in 1980, I believe. And or 81. So and I got out in 84. So all the way along, restaurants, some bars. I wasn't as good at working bars then as I am now. Didn't really understand them as much.
What's the difference between bar magic and just restaurant magic?
The main thing I discovered quickly was that in a bar, people come and stay. In a restaurant, people come in, they eat, and they leave. If you have somebody sitting there for 3-4 hours, you know, you've got to be able to pace yourself. You have to be able to have enough material that you can keep them entertained. But at the same time, you don't have to be a trick monkey and just performing over and over and over. That's where you develop the personality skills to just have conversations with people and find out about them. And you know, that's really where you build the rapport. And, we've always heard that if they like you, they'll like your magic. And so that's certainly proved out in bars and restaurants.
I think that's a very good point. In a particularly at a bar, you want people to kind of stay and have more than one drink, unless they're waiting to be seated at a table for dinner or something kind of like that. But if they're going to be coming in and sitting for a while, you want them to feel as if that's a friendly bar they can kind of come back to, which, again, I think would be more difficult as a bar magician than it would be as a restaurant magician. Restaurant magicians, you have patrons who will come back from time to time, and also you can show them a few new things if you've got some people who are regulars. But if you got a regular at a bar, they don't go in and have dinner necessarily. They're just at the bar, and so you'll be seeing those people, depending upon how frequent of a visitor, at least more than once a week.
So what I've learned about that situation is that those people, after they've seen you several times, is that they're still coming in. But now they're not so much watching you, but they're watching other people react to you.
Oh, to the very same tricks they've already seen before.
Exactly. Like,
hey, watch what this guy's going to do.
Yep. And if you, you know, think about some of the classic bar restaurant magicians like Julian, you know, he only did a handful of tricks, but people would come back time and again to see those handful of tricks and see their friends react to it.
I assume you've seen Heba Haba Al and... like you said, Matt Shulian, I guess. Of course, you worked with Bob Shulian there at the Magic Lounge. Mm-hmm. But who are some of the other guys you saw?
Well, by the time I was – I moved to Chicago in 85. So by the time I came around, Matt Shulian was already in heaven. But Charlie Shulian, his son, was around. And then Bobby was Charlie's – or, yes, was Charlie's son. And sadly, he passed away this past year, about a year and a half ago.
Right.
Certainly those guys were, but also the, one of the mainstays at the New York Magic, at Shulian's was Al James. Al has been a Chicago bar restaurant magician for longer than anybody here in town. And, so Al, and he's still performing. He still performs at the lounge. Mm-hmm. And, so Al was around always. And, oh, guys like Bill Weimer. Don't know if you know of him.
I know Bill.
So, he was a regular for quite a while. Who are some of the other guys that I can think of? I saw Heba Haba a couple of times at the old New York Lounge. Did you ever go there, Scott?
I never did. Well, let me think about that. How far is that from Magic Inc's shop?
Yeah, that's the one that was just up the street from Magic Inc.
Then yes, one time when Magic Inc closed one evening, I was there with Jay, and he said, "Hey, you want to go to dinner over at New York Lounge?" And that was the reason. I remember how close it was because we just walked a few blocks away.
Yep.
So that must have been. And then somebody sat down and did some magic for us. But no, I didn't see Heba Haba Al perform there. I saw him actually at a convention that Charlie McFarlane and David Fields had put on in Midland, Texas back in the early 80s that was called Close Up for Connoisseurs. And Heba Haba Al came in and performed and lectured for us.
Oh, fun. Yeah. He was a funny guy.
Yeah.
And there was another great guy there at the New York Lounge, Skeets. Can't think of his real name, but I only knew him as Skeets, basically. So he was very funny as well. And then
was he a big guy? Kind of big guy?
No, he was an older, skinny guy.
Okay, that's.
It might have been Nick, the owner, who also did magic, but he mainly let the other guys do it.
Okay.
There was also Mr. Ash. Mr. Ash was a dealer in Chicago and Chicago fixture for many, many years. Sadly, he passed away about a year ago. And Ken Mate is another name that performed at the New York Lounge. I never actually worked at the New York Lounge myself. I sort of did, but after it was a New York Lounge, after it was sold, it was a couple of different bars. But people knew the place or they knew the address and they kept coming back for magic. So at one point, the owner at that time called Al James and said, "Hey, do you want to come back and work here again?" And Al said, "No, you know, I've got other gigs. I can't really do it." So he called me and he said, "Hey, you know, interested in working in the New York Lounge?" At the time, it was called, not the New York Lounge, Hot Shots.
Hot Shots, okay.
Yes. So I went there and we tried it for a while. But, you know, by that time, entertainment had changed. You know, the neighborhood had changed. The people that would walk to that bar just didn't live there anymore. I'm not saying it changed for the worse necessarily. But and then, you know, certainly entertainment options have just exploded in the last 25 years. So it just really didn't work out. You know, it wasn't really worth their time to pay me to be there. So I worked the room, but I never really worked when it was the New York Lounge. And kind of same with Shulian's. I never really worked there. I filled in a few times there, but I was never really a regular there because the guys that worked there, Jimmy Krizak was another great guy from Shulian's. The guys that had worked there, you know, unless somebody died, there was no openings. But I filled in there several times, and occasionally they would do a Halloween show in the back room, a stand-up show. So I did that a couple of times.
It used to be, of course, Chicago was well known for all of their bars, unlike any other city. I don't think New York even had came close to rivaling that. And mm-hmm. LA, Atlanta, Houston, Chicago was the only place. Number one, they had a lot of magic shops. I remember Don Weiberg telling me about, I think at one point, it was in the 1950s or something, there were like six or eight shops within a 3-block area downtown or something. Mm-hmm. And then all of the different magic venues for performing bar magic, like you said, Shulian's, New York Lounge, the Pickle Barrel, and I don't remember how many other, but there were just a ton of them. Why do you think that resonated so greatly in Chicago as opposed to other cities?
I'm not really sure of that answer. I think that I don't know, people like to go to bar, certainly Chicago was a huge bar town. There aren't nearly as many bars as there used to be, but certainly there was, they'd say there's a bar on every corner, which was pretty accurate, maybe not every corner, but
well, unless you're around Wrigley Park, then it's like every other building.
Right. Right. Yes. Do you recall that you and I went to Shulian's? You were in town once. I think you were doing a trade show. Charlie Shulian sat down with us for over an hour and just told us stories. And
I don't know why I'd forgotten about that until that all of a sudden that comes back. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Yep. That was a while back. We'd done that.
We both had darker hair back then.
yes, I did. Your time is coming, my young friend.
Yeah, well, no, I'm there.
So, I think it's kind of interesting. It's almost like there was a shift as well in which that, of course, brick and mortar magic shops are kind of going out of vogue, and I say out of vogue, they're going out of business. Mm-hmm. With an internet and everything else, of course, is changing things from that standpoint, but people still like live entertainment. And I mean, as far as going to theater, to symphonies, as well as going to live magic shows and seeing magicians at bars. Mm-hmm. And it is hard to find magic seems to be more today for people who are doing close-up. And I say that because there are fewer and fewer illusionists who are going out and performing because there are fewer venues where they can go out and do dove magic or big illusions, et cetera, and try to get their money back for their investment and everything, unless you're going on a tour or got an agent or whatever. But they're getting fewer and fewer. The point is most things that are being sold by magic shops and dealers today are really geared more for the close-up magician and what they call the street magician. I'm not sure exactly what street magic is. Mm-hmm. Well, I know what street magic is, but I mean, as far as being paid for that. But still it would lend itself more to working in restaurants. Mm-hmm. It is still, I think, hard to get that restaurant job because there are so few of them. As I just mentioned, few cities have them, but there are more venues like the Chicago Magic Lounge and others that have been open, Smoke and Mirrors. Right. You got Nashville, the House of Cards, and down at Wizards in Orlando. And I mean, there are about a dozen clubs around the country where people can kind of come in and perform. But as far as working on a regular basis, night after night or week after week, it's hard to try to get that first job. Any advice on getting into a restaurant that you have or that you've lectured about or talked about?
Yes. The thing about restaurants is restaurant owners are very busy people. You can't call them up and leave a message and expect that they'll call you back. You have to show up. And what I always like to do when I'm scouting out restaurants, of course, is just to go to it the first time. Check it out, see what the vibe is of the place, see if the people are having a good time, how I'm treated at the bar, if I'm having a drink there. And then from there, you can decide if you want to actually contact them. But then when you do contact them, then you can say, hey, I was in your restaurant the other night. So that picks up their ears right away because, people will say that to them. They don't know that you're a magician necessarily. But, they will pay attention to one of their patrons,
right?
Usually. So then you can say, hey, I was in your restaurant the other night, and I'm a professional magician. And here are the words that I came up with some years ago that have actually treated me pretty well. And I hope that it can be so for others. Instead of saying, hey, let me come here and do magic at your tables, what I came up with was this line. I own a company I own an entertainment company, and we specialize in magic night promotions for bars and restaurants. Now you're talking their language, because liquor companies will do promotions. You know, food companies will do promotions where they're trying to push a new product. So it's something that they understand. If you just go up to a guy and say, hey, you know, I'm going to walk around your tables. No, you're not. You're going to get in the way of service. You're going to bother my guests. No. If you come at them with the approach of, this is a promotion that'll bring you in more business, then they're going to listen more closely. Now, that being said, there's still a long way between, you know, having them say it's a great idea and then having them spend the money. I mean, there are some restaurants that I worked on for a year, just stopping in every once in a while saying, hey, I was in the neighborhood, thought I'd stop by and have a beer. And that time, at those times, I don't really go in with the idea that I'm going to be doing magic, you know, at the time. I mean, occasionally I'll do a little something, but, you know, I'm not going into re-audition every time. I'm just making my face known and letting them know I'm a regular guy and a, you know, nice guy to be with. So it's a process. It's kind of a dance, and it takes some time sometimes. Now, on the other hand, I've been working for, gosh, probably almost 10 years at a place called Manny's Deli downtown in Chicago. And Manny's has been around for, I don't know, 80 years. And they wanted to do magic. So a friend of mine is related to the owners there. He said, hey, Bibik, you should call this guy up, or I want you to meet this guy. He wants to do magic at his restaurant. So that was a totally different situation, because that really wasn't even a sale. He just said, when can you start and how much is it? So, I mean, those are very rare, but that can happen also.
I think that would be fairly rare. It's kind of like finding a trade show. It's like, we're out of the blue, as opposed to soliciting that, where someone just happens to say to you when you're at a restaurant and you're working or something and saying, hey, we'd like to have you come and do a trade show for us, kind of a thing where you really hadn't solicited that. That's something that'd be ideal, of course, when you're working at a restaurant. And that's a lot of times, I think, when you're working at a restaurant, you do have an end goal. There is some reason why you're there. I mean, of course, it's to make some money, but and also to practice new things and to meet people. But also it is to promote yourself and to get additional work.
Right. That's actually my main goal for a restaurant. And that's what I look at before I go into a place. I look at the clientele. You know, I don't want to work at McDonald's. Some people have. And, you know, I guess that's fine for them. But, you know, I want to work something more upscale that people that go there will have parties and will have some money to spend on entertainment.
Right.
So, yeah, you definitely have to pick your venue carefully.
Well, I think also you need to know what it is that you're wanting to do. For an example, I don't do children's parties. So whenever I am asked, I've entertained the kids and they've had a good time. I mean, I used to do birthday parties, but I'm at a point where I can pick and choose as to what I want to do and the kinds of shows I want to, where I want to perform. And that's not necessarily someplace and something that I do want to continue. So
well, that's part of it's one of the conditions of your parole, isn't it?
Well, yeah. but I can suggest other magicians that want to do that. But my point is, I think you should have a goal for magic or life in general, basically, of where you want to be in 1 year, 3 years, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So this way that you can eventually get to where you want to be. Otherwise, you might get at the end of a certain period and turn around and say, well, gee, I wish I would have done such and such. Well, if you would have had a plan, you would have gotten there, of course. And so my point is that if you want to continue to stay and work in just one location, and that's been your goal, there's nothing wrong with that. You have achieved your goal.
Right. I mean, I think people that are maybe part-timers will, you know, take that approach. They're not counting.
Correct.
You know, they're not depending upon.
There's nothing wrong with that. Right.
No. I'm going to have a little coffee if you don't mind. That's tiny.
And that looks like a good cup of cappuccino.
That's a nice coffee right there. For our listeners at home, this is the tiniest cup of coffee ever. So thank you.
It's about a thimble full. So we have a little cuppa.
Exactly.
Which is one of the things, by the way, too, I was going to ask you that differentiates a bar magician from a walk-around cocktail and restaurant type of magician, where there, as a strolling magician. You're doing bang, bang, bang magic and tricks and entertaining the audience and trying to move from one to the next. Whereas when you are working behind a bar, you have to have gags and jokes as well as tricks. There was a good mix of that. I think I heard you say on a recent show something. Could you give that mix there again?
Yes. I think I said you have to have 100 gags, 1,000 tricks, and 1,000,000 jokes.
That was it. Yeah.
To be a good bar magician. But really what I think about, ever since I've been working at the Magic Lounge and being the bar magician there, well, a couple of things. First of all, when people come in the secret laundry entrance, if you're not familiar, you walk into a laundromat and then you find the secret door and you're in the magic bar. I'm the first magician people will see. And although our shows are ticketed and you have to buy a ticket, the magic bar is open to the public for free. So you can just come in and see magic at the bar. So I may be the first magician they've ever seen. I may be the only magician they've ever seen. So it's a really important position, not only for the lounge, but for me as well, because whether they come back or not to buy a ticket for the show can often rest on my shoulders and the time they've had there at the bar. So what I like to do is consider myself as a magical host. I'm not really there to push trick after trick after trick. You know, people want to have conversations. They want to have a drink. You know, I slide into it easily. I'll do a set and then I'll take a little break. I'll come back and do another set, 15 or 20 minutes at the most. Do another, take another break. So it's a more relaxed pace.
Yeah, I recently had Doc Eason on as a guest, and he was talking, of course, about get the money. Get the friggin' mm-hmm. money, basically. And that's one of the important things is you want to keep people drinking at the bar and to mm-hmm. make sure, they're going to be there to see tricks. But it's a lot like a trade show from the standpoint of you're trying to keep the audience and tell them and have them stay there for a while and ask questions for the salesman and about the product, et cetera. And here right. you want them to have more drinks. And yep. so that's why you got to have a lot of gags, a lot of jokes. You just can't do trick after trick after trick. Sure. I think it's just gets to be monotonous mm-hmm. after a while.
Yep.
So, I think you have to treat that completely different as a bar magician versus a strolling magician.
Definitely. But in a way, it's a lot more fun. You get to know people more personally. That opens up more doors for other events and gigs. And, they remember you. I think they remember you a lot longer. When they go into the Magic Lounge, when they go into the main show, there's magicians working the tables. And oftentimes it is a little bit more of the traditional Chicago style where they will sit down with you. But they only see you for a few minutes. And there's four or five magicians working the tables. They may or may mm-hmm. not remember who you are. Whereas at the bar, I have time to give them my information. I have my little tip jar out if they're interested. I have mm-hmm. a little Venmo card if they don't have any cash. People don't have cash these days.
Yeah.
So, and I always talk about how, this money isn't necessarily just for me. I support a lot of charities. Tonight we're supporting Cartographers Without Borders.
That's a good one.
Those guys are lost. Yeah.
Yes, they are without their borders. Yeah.
Right. And of course the Lawn Fertilizer Foundation. It's a grassroots organization.
Oh. Are there people who will write these down and say, wait just a minute, you're going too fast?
Sometimes I'll use the line. It's a good one. Write it down. Yeah. Which was the line of a tagline of a of an Irish comedian. Heck was that guy's name? Very famous Irish comedian. I'll never forget what's his name.
Oh, what's his name? Yeah, that's right. My best friend.
Exactly.
Whenever they do come to the bar, and again, they're just coming in, let's say, for a drink. They're not there for the paid show. Are you kind of trying to entice them to say, hey, you might want to stick around for the show a little bit later? Or are you here for the show? And if not, let me tell you what's going on over there a little bit later. So you're kind of a salesman for that, I assume, as well?
Absolutely, yeah. But what we found out, what happened fairly quickly at the lounge is that our shows were sold out. So, it wasn't really so much a matter of, hey, stick around for the show because there's no availability. The main theater seats 120.
When it's full, it's full, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. There's no standing room. But the other gag that I've used, though, I'm going to go step out of frame for a moment. The other gag that I've tied in with that Maybe I should just bring my whole toy box over.
Why not? Wow, what a suitcase full of stuff.
Yeah.
Look like Captain Kangaroo or another Banana Man from Captain Kangaroo. Yeah.
This is something, let me come out this way so we can get a little bit. Oh, hi. So since our shows were sold out, oftentimes I say, hey, you know, you guys seen the show tonight? No, it's sold out. Well, then I'd lean in closer and say, hey, I don't normally do this, but I got some free tickets. And I give them one of these. And this is an old gag. Let's see. I don't know if we can see this or not. Let's see.
Oh, yes. Yeah, well, this is a free ticket. Yeah.
Yes.
This is good for, it's not good
it's
for
not
anything.
Good it's good for anything.
Free.
Yes.
It's just free.
It's a free ticket. It's not good for anything. It's just free.
Yeah.
So Fun Incorporated are selling these now. I mean, it's an old gag that's been around forever. But
that's
they actually,
like on a roll of tickets kind of a thing.
Exactly. They actually had rolls of tickets printed up. So when you buy a roll, there are 100 of them on there. So I can give them out. I can put my name on the back. And, you know, people are excited. They think they're going to be getting a free ticket. And so I'm a dick. So,
but a pleasant one.
Yes. But certainly, you know, people once they get excited. And originally I was showing people, you know, people were interested. I'd take them for a peek inside of the theater. But we kind of put a kibosh on that because, you know, we wanted them to buy a ticket. It's like peeking behind the curtain.
That's part of the surprise. It's like kind of see what's going on back over there.
Right.
It's going to cost you. Yeah. You know,
right.
A little
bit, yeah. And I always thought that it was a good sales point. But they said, no, man, they want to, you know, it's. When the curtain opens, you want it to be exciting.
They're already getting a peek behind the curtain whenever they get to see you to begin with, whenever they're at the bar and getting some of the magic and whatnot, and then kind of look over the shoulder and kind of see the stage area, at least.
No, you can't really see it unless you...
Oh, is that right?
You can't see the stage. There is a balcony there as well.
Yeah.
So you can kind of hear things, but there's a big curtain, so...
Yeah,
that actually turned out to be sort of a flaw in the design when we first opened, was that the noise from the bar would leak into the theater. So we invested many dollars in I say we, of course, I've got no ownership, but they invested many dollars in a soundproof curtain to cover that area.
That's
so
right.
That helped quite a bit.
I remember because before that was open. That's why I was thinking then. Yeah,
right.
I remember them saying it did have a little bit of sound. Mm-hmm. That was a little bit of sound abatement issue that they put in the place there. I noticed also, of course, you're using a close-up pad. And you'd mentioned recently where someone had actually stolen that pad. Have you had stuff stolen before like that where you've had your props? I mean, when your back is turned, particularly as a bar magician, I would think they would think, oh, this is a fun thing. I'm just going to – he probably got another one of these. I'll take this as a memento or something.
I think it's happened. I mean, usually you know, you have an idea or you could see it happening and they don't think you see them, but you do. But, yes, I have this little carpet that I bought out of somebody's trunk in Colon, Michigan, Steve Weichel, I think it was. And, couple of ladies came in late one evening and they were in town from Pittsburgh, I believe, and they were having a good time and they decided they needed my little carpet. So I actually did not notice at the time. It was toward the end of the evening and, you know, I'm packing up my stuff and they leave. And about a day or two later, I said, hey, where the heck is my carpet? You know, did I leave it at the lounge? Where is that thing? So then I was concerned that somehow it fell into the garbage. There's a garbage can right next to the magic bar there. You know, it fell into the garbage and it's gone. So we reviewed the video tape, the security cameras.
Yeah.
Of course, they're everywhere these days. And I'm not a big fan of them usually, but in this particular case, we saw these two people, you know, take the thing and put it in their purse.
Wow.
So through their credit card bill, our marketing manager, Cindy, who happens to be married to Joey Cranford, she tracked these two women down. And so first she sent them a message on Facebook and she didn't get a response. And then she called them at work. And I called the lady at work and said, hey, you know, at the Magic Lounge, something's missing from the Magic Lounge. And we suggest that you return it before, you know, this is made more public. And she was a sales manager of a big, you know, convention hotel in Pittsburgh.
Holy cow.
I mean, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't somebody that worked at the gas station. Mm-hmm. This was somebody that, first of all, should have known better. And secondly, had a lot to lose. So believe it or not, about 2 weeks later, the thing came back. So I was happy about that.
Kind of maybe plied them with too many drinks, I guess.
Yeah, They also stole the menu, which was stupid because they could just have a menu.
Have a menu for free.
So.
I have to share a similar story. My wife and I were working in Savannah, Georgia, doing a big conference. And one of the things we used to do was a gypsy rope tie. And the rope that we used was, well, anyhow, after the show was over, we're packing up and everything. And Kathy says, well, where's the rope? And I said, well, I thought you had already wrapped that up and put it. And she says, no, I can't find it. And then she noticed there was some guy who had been the gentleman who had been tied up in that routine, was walking out with the rope. And so she followed him out, got in the elevator, and it was a younger fella, and he had it underneath his jacket, like he was hiding it, basically. Yeah. And she said, I'm going to need to get that rope back because, you know, we've got other shows we do, you know, we need that. And he said, oh, he said, well, I'm just going to be taking upstairs. My wife and I were going to practice this or something. And, you know, he sheepishly pulled it. And the guy was like, he wasn't the CEO, but he was like the vice president of the company or something, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, there were like 1,000 people there or something. And so it was like, this is really
people.
Yeah. It's like, I guess he'd had a few drinks and thought, yeah, this would be a fun thing to play with tonight.
I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. Well, have you had some other people who have been inspired to do magic and saying, hey, do you give lessons? And can you make recommendations to me of where I can go to learn more magic or something? Have you inspired people to do that?
I believe so. Yes. I've gotten several requests to do some lessons. And, you know, originally I wasn't that interested because many years ago I did a kid's magic class and it was just terrible. You know, mm-hmm. they don't want to know about magic. They just want to know how it's done. And then that's it. Yeah. They had no interest in performing or any technique or anything like that. And because of that, I turned down an opportunity, which, speaking of, you know, regrets later, a guy called me on the phone one day. He says, hey, I'm 40 years old. I've retired and I want to learn how to do magic. And I said, you know, I don't really teach, you know, maybe call Magic Incorporated. And I hung up the phone and I said, what did I just do? This man is 40 years old and he's retired. Perhaps he's somebody that I should take on as a student.
Yeah,
he's doing something right.
Yeah.
So I tried to trace back the call and I was not able to find the guy. So, you know, always say yes to your opportunities as they're presented.
Yeah, that's good advice, I think. Yeah. perhaps should. Have there been some other things where you have been at the bar or perhaps back at the restaurant that were some interesting stories or interesting characters or having to deal with someone that was perhaps an unruly volunteer?
Yes, yeah, so, you know, when I did the show a couple of days ago for Franz, somebody asked about how do you deal with drunk spectators? And I... thinking about it later, I didn't really answer the question very well, but the answer is you don't deal mm-hmm. with them. The great thing about working a restaurant is if you go up to a table and they're not receptive, you can always say, well, thanks. You guys have a great night. And you leave.
Yeah.
You don't have to stay there. It's a little bit tougher at bars because they're sitting there with you. It all depends. Most people are not trying to be destructive necessarily. That's not the word I'm searching for, but you know, they're not malicious. That's the word. They're not doing it out of malice or, you know, they're trying to find it. They're kind of just, they think they're just playing along.
Right.
So it all depends. And I can play too. You know, I'll play along with them for a while, but if there are situations, you know, at the Magic Lounge, we have management staff so we can come in and, you know, kick the people out. We had a, oh, gosh, I mentioned this the other day. We had a guy came in there one time. He says, help me, help me. I swallowed a boomerang. Man, we must have kicked him out 10 times. But on an actual event, I was at the bar one night, and I looked over, and I said to the bartender, hey, does that woman have her breast hanging out? And he looked, and he said, yes. So, for whatever reason, this woman had taken her breast out and was sitting there at the table behind the, in front of the bar, not at the bar itself, but
intentionally. I mean, it's like she had.
Yeah. And okay. Our Leslie, our manager, walked over to her and said, "Hey, you know, you got to cover up." And she said, "Oh, well, I don't mind having my boobs out." And she said, "We mind. Perhaps it's time for you to go."
Yeah, that reminds me.
The guys are saying, "Oh, thanks, Leslie."
of a story like at the Magic Castle some years ago, I had heard, in which there was somebody doing a SpongeBob routine for some lady who had a low cut dress. And as she did, one of them popped out. Uh-huh. And so someone else was noticing, they were watching the routine. It was just in the bar area. So it wasn't one of the shows or anything. And so he was doing something else. He kept doing another trick. And before long, more and more people were coming around because he was just trying to keep her more and more engaged in watching his hands, basically, and what was going on rather than to say something. And then before long, I guess her husband had come over, said, oh, there must be a crowd. What's going on? And went over there and he said, hey. And he said, hey, you know, you're exposing yourself. And she got embarrassed and they left and everything. It's like, okay.
Here's one I ran into when I was working restaurants, working Carlos Murphy's actually.
Yeah.
They had giant margaritas that were popular,
like,
you know,
fish bowl type. Yeah.
Exactly. So I was at this table, about 10 people. And this isn't a very pleasant story. I should forewarn you.
okay.
I was doing the generic cards, my routine for the mental photography deck. Mm-hmm. And so there are many stages in that thing where magic things happen. You know, the cards are blank. Suddenly there's a face of a card. You know, suddenly there's a back of a card. Suddenly they're all there. Suddenly they're all blank. Every time that something amazing happened, this woman took a big slug out of her margarita. All right. Okay. And I'm standing right next to her at the corner of the table.
Yeah.
And I get toward the end of the trick and I look over and I realize this woman is vomiting into her glass.
Putting everything back in that she had just
exactly
taken, just
and
consumed.
More. So that was a good time for me to say, "Hey, folks, you guys have a good time here tonight. I gotta go." And
you've been having way too much fun here tonight.
But man, my magic made people sick. That's what I like to think.
Yeah, is that what's on your business card? My magic.
Yes, it is.
People sick.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah.
That's why you're the amazing Bibbick.
Exactly.
That's funny. Yep. Well, I always remember early on you were known as Bibbick, of course.
Yes.
And I always thought that was clever. It's like Al the Only. It's a nice tagline that people will remember, certainly. And I would think, of course, would mean, let's see, who should we have for our show? Bibbick, of course. Mm-hmm. I assume that was kind of your thinking on that.
Yeah, actually, that sort of came out. I started doing that in high school, like probably my senior year in high school, I started using that tagline. And the way it started is I would write little notes to a girl in class and I'd sign them different ways. Bibbick, you fool. And then one time I signed it Bibbick, of course. And I said, hey, that's, you know, that's pretty good. So I kept that. But I sort of got away from that some years later, because I was kind of using that as a company name. Uh-huh. And if you called somebody and said, hey, you know, I'm calling Joe Schmo. Yes, who is this? Well, this is Bibbick. What's your company? Bibbick, of course. They just didn't get it. You know what I mean? As a company name, it wasn't very good. And then I started doing some in Chicago. Not only is there a lot of magic, but there are a lot of storefront comedy shows and variety shows that people pop open. And
Little pocket theater kind of places.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I started doing some of those, and there was never any pay, but there was usually beer. And and then so one of those shows, they started calling me the Amazing Bibbick. And so that's kind of what I've been going with the last couple of years.
I thought they were going to say Bibbick the beer drinker.
Yeah. So that's how that came about. But yeah, there's still people that know me by that.
So your company is, they say, this is Jeff Bibbick. You say, what's your company name? See, the Amazing Bibbick? Or do you have a company?
I know. Chicago Magic Network is what I have.
Magic Network. Yeah.
Yeah. Settled out for some.
I think it's a good idea business-wise to have a separate entity. And some years ago, I had an accountant recommend to me to have converted to an S-Corp. So this way you put money under the S-Corp, which is separate from your own business, essentially. And so I had set up a S&K Wells Enterprises, Inc. And so I think it's a good idea. People are thinking about having this as a taxable business, and it is a business, and it depends upon what you want that to sound like whenever you are calling companies. And if you're wanting to do more corporate work, if you're doing birthday parties, it's still a good idea to have an S-Corp, but you don't necessarily have to have a corporate sounding name necessarily. It could be Jim Bob the Clown company or something, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But I still think it's a good idea to have some sort of a a firewall or some sort of a company name to represent you. Kind of a thing. Do you still do a lot of trade shows? Let me rephrase that. What I mean is, do you do trade shows and a lot of corporate stuff in addition to working at the Chicago Magic Lounge? Because that's really a sweet gig as far as I kind of think you've got a bird nest on the ground there of a plum job of people who would love to have your position to be that bar magician behind a beautiful bar in a great city, and people are coming in and having fun then all the time. But do people then also ask you, hey, I want you to come and do this show, or can you fly to Dubai to do a week or whatever? And do you do that from time to time and get somebody else to come in and fill in for you? And how do you go about selecting somebody, or is there a, go ahead.
Yeah, they've always been very flexible with our schedules. Obviously, I want to be there as much as I can, but certainly they are, you know, familiar with getting out to do private parties and stuff. I've not flown to Dubai, but I have flown to Davenport. So there you go.
Oh, same well, thing. But you have been to Dubai when you were flying around the world. You went to 11 countries, or what was that, in 11 days? You went to how many? Went around the world?
Yes.
Tell me that story.
Yes, it was a great experience. David Seebach, an illusionist from Milwaukee. People know. He called me up one day and he says, hey, do you do mentalism? And of course I said, sure, of course I do. So he had been contacted about doing this tour, and it was five people: David Seebach, his assistant Karen Burris, a friend of ours from Chicago, who is also a guitar player and singer, but she's been a box jumper for many years, and does magic and clowning as well on her own. And a guy named Marty Polio from Louisville, Kentucky. Myself, and then the guy who put it together was a guy named Keith, and he was the MC. He's a stand-up guy, comedian, and a stand-up guy. but anyway, the five of us flew out of Chicago, and we left one afternoon, and we flew west, and it got dark, and it got light again, and then it got dark again, and then finally we landed in Hong Kong for a couple of hour layover, and then from there we flew a couple more hours to Singapore. So we got to Singapore probably, I don't know what, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, something like that. But basically we'd been on the plane for, you know, 20 hours. So in Singapore, we were there for 2 days. We performed at the Navy base there.
Was it a cargo plane kind of a thing, a military vehicle, or was it commercial?
The first part was commercial. And but from Singapore, we flew to a tiny little island in the Indian Ocean called Diego Garcia. And that was military transport because it's a restricted area. There are no commercial flights in or out. So Diego is a really incredible place. It's the top of an old volcano. So it has a natural harbor. And the island is 36 miles long, but it's only a half a mile wide. Wow. And the south half of the island is all nature preserve. The north half is a U.S. naval base. So it's kind of a tough assignment for the sailors there because they're there for a year. And wow. So that's a super long time to be
living on a postage stamp, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. In a place like that. Now, of course, they have great facilities, you know, health club, great pool. And of course, they bring in shows. And so so we did 2 days in Diego Garcia. And then from there, we flew to Bahrain in the Middle East, and not Dubai, but Bahrain, which is it's a little bump off of Saudi Arabia. And we were there for 2 days. That was a very interesting country. Very rich, a lot of wealth there. It's a tiny little country. It's a Muslim country. Unfortunately, they have an incredible mosque there, but unfortunately, the day we flew in was on a Friday, so the mosques were not open for tours because it was their holy day.
Were there certain tricks that you had to take out because of their religion?
No, because our audience was the U.S.
Of course.
Sailors.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So the base there in Bahrain is really more like a college campus. You know, several dormitory type buildings, hotel sort of buildings, but then a giant recreation center with gymnasiums, you know, swimming pool. We were in a beautiful theater there, but right next door to our theater was a first run movie house. So they could either come to our show or they could go see, you know, the latest movie. So we were there for 2 days also. And then from there, we flew back through London. So we circled the globe in 11 days. So
when you came through
2 days in each place, so that meant 6 days on the ground, translates to 5 days up in the air.
when you were on the ground, did you get an opportunity then really to kind of enjoy the tourist spots?
Somewhat, yeah. Singapore is very interesting, very, very expensive, for one thing. We had a small stipend. The USO does not pay very well, but certainly the opportunity was something I would not have passed up, you know, because of the pay. But so we had a small stipend as well. But, you know, I mean, we went to dinner there in Singapore the first evening, and the hamburgers were $25.
Ow, for a hamburger.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So, so quite an expensive. So the second day, actually, maybe it was even later that day, we found the local market. And in the market, they had food stalls that were just incredible. And so, you know, you could eat for a lot less there.
So, and then you went to London, and there was no base in London. That was just a stopover.
No, that was just a stopover. So we were there, I think, about 8 hours just in Heathrow. And then we flew out from Heathrow back to Chicago. Great time. Yeah.
I think David has done that more than once. He's done that a few times, I believe.
I think he may have done it more than once. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would do it again. They sort of switched their programming up now. It's, you know, we've tried to get back in and have not had any success. So it's actually Armed Forces Entertainment handles the shows. The USO shows specifically are more big name talent. So I call it a USO show because that's what people really are familiar with. But, you know, if you want to get technical, it's the Armed Forces Entertainment.
Right. Yeah. So they're talking about people who are celebrity entertainers who, like Beyonce or somebody, I guess, that would come in for a USO tour, like Bob Hope used to do, kind of a thing.
Right, right. In the airport in Diego Garcia, they had a picture. Bob Hope had been there in the, I don't know, early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So our shows were not quite to the level of Bob Hope's attendance. You know, you think of those Bob Hope specials, and there would be a couple thousand people sitting on a hillside watching him. In fact, I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, for the time and expense of getting us there and having us put on our show in Singapore, we had about maybe 40 people at the show. Diego was a lot different, of course, because there's nothing else to do there. So those shows were full.
Everybody.
But also same thing, Bahrain. We had about 50 people. So you never really know.
It's kind of like a phone room show, I guess, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I assume you've done some phone room type shows.
You know, I've never really gotten into that. I don't know why. Never had the opportunity.
I had a few of those, and that's the kind of thing where they would sell shows to people who would buy tickets, but they were basically just giving those as, quote, donations for some charity. And you never knew if there were going to be 30 people or 3,000 people who would show up in the theater because they had, but you still got the same pay. It was, kind of fun. So listen, we've been, I appreciate your time in getting to talk about a little bit about Chicago Magic and everything. I mentioned at the beginning of this about Chicago Magic. And before we do close, I wanted just to, mention exactly what Chicago Magic is. You kind of alluded to that a little bit earlier as far as being able to sit down, but Chicago Magic is different from regular strolling magic. Do you want to differentiate that and explain that too?
I don't know that it's so much different, but Shulian's really is the place that started with the, as far as I know, with sitting down. You know, all the restaurants, Carlos Murphy's, everything I had done till that time was all stand up. And and Shulian's was the place really where you saw them sitting with the guests. And I'll tell you what, that really, it makes a big difference because then you're really more part of them. Mm-hmm. You make better money that way. And you get to know people more. One thing that I mentioned the other day that's very important when you're a magician is to learn people's names. Because a person's name is their strongest magic word. If you think about your name, you're given your name at birth and you have it your entire life. And if you live your life correctly, your name goes on well after you're gone. In fact, if you live it incorrectly, that can also be true. But I feel it's very important to get people's names, and you know you get a better connection with people that way.
That's right, and so I think that's one of the things that's important as far as trying to develop that short-term memory. You don't need to remember their name for the rest of your life or anything, but it's something just paying attention. And I think that a lot of times that is a problem with humans in general, that we don't pay attention to listen to what someone is saying to us. Whenever we're shaking hands with somebody, we're typically mentally sizing them up. What kind of conversation do I want to have with this person? Where do I think they fit in the socioeconomic sphere of people I've met, and et cetera. And by that time, they've already told you, hey, my name is Sam. And then later, I'm sorry, what was your name then again? It's like, well, I already told you. But likewise, they had heard your name and they don't remember your name then either. So I had learned some time ago to try to make people to remember your name easier by having something that's a hook that you can say on. Like my brother's name was Rod Wells. He would always say, that's Rod, like fishing rod. And so people will kind of start to remember that then later to remember your name, which is part of the problem. If you've ever talked to anyone who's gone on a cruise ship saying they saw a magician, well, what was the guy's name? I don't remember. Boy, was he good. And likewise, I think a lot of times at a restaurant, they may take your card or may not, but they don't remember your names. But if you can have something that would be a hook, that's why I think the amazing Bibbic or Bibbic, of course, or whatever that you have of something that would be a hook. My name is Scott, like from Scotland. I'm not from Scotland, but I think you'd like the land where I'm from, which is actually from Illinois. But anyhow, so but talking about your name or something of having a hook with that to get people to remember that. And likewise, you should remember their name because, again, that's very precious. They've been given that at birth, going to take it to the grave.
Dale Carnegie said a man's name is the sweetest sound to his ears.
Exactly.
I'm sure that applies to women as well.
I had, gotten my first job out of college because I had remembered everyone's name in the room. They had other people who were coming through. And the reason I know that is because they later told me other people had great resumes and they had, good things they were showing and talking about, et cetera. But whenever you left, you called each of us by our names and you had remembered our names. And we thought that's important.
Yep, so very powerful.
There you go. You know, And so same thing whenever you're leaving a cocktail party at the end of the evening and saying, hey, thanks, Jim and Julia. Appreciate that, Steve and everybody, as you're walking out, that everyone you just talked to the last couple of hours, and they're going to remember you because it's like, what was that guy's name again? He remembered me. It's not they're going to remember the trick so much as that you remembered their name. That's how important I think that is.
I do that quite a bit at the Magic Lounge. As people are coming in, I say, welcome, come on in, get a cocktail. Tell me your name, please. And they do. And I say, well, this is great. Please meet a few of my friends over here. This is Scott. This is Al. This is Tony. This is Bob. And so, and the thing is, you know, that sounds difficult, but actually at the lounge, it's not that difficult because people sort of trickle in before the show. And so I can, you know, I have time to learn them. And what I'm doing is every time I reintroduce them, I'm reminding myself as well. So it's a very powerful tool. And like you said, people are often more impressed with that than, you know, some of the magic you may do.
And you can also use that then later if you're going to put their name on a card or something, if you're come back to that and saying, hey, was your name? Wait a minute, it's over here. We've got this. Your name's already here. There's some way that you can bring their name around full circle, I think.
And the other thing about that I just want to bring up is that sometimes magicians will have somebody up on stage and they'll have a very difficult name. And rather than say, you know, how do you spell that? Or tell me again what your name is, please. They'll just say, well, you know, I'm going to call you Judy. Well, it gets a laugh from the audience, but you've just diminished that person. Their name is not Judy. So learn their damn names. It's not that hard. If you pay attention, it's not that hard. The other thing that I do is often write down names. And I have a book of names that I've collected.
A book of names, used in the lounge. I used to use stickers. I would have my name underneath there with my phone number. So I'd say Scott Wells and then my number. And so I'd say, what was your name? Okay, it's Jeff. And I would write down Jeff. And then I would stick it on your breast, your chest. And then, and likewise, if it was a woman, I'd peeled off and I'd say, oh, here, you put that on there. And so this way, they were walking around. And you also knew that you had performed for that person, and also your host knew that you had been around because they'll see all these other names.
That's a really good idea. Yeah.
With your name on that tag and theirs as well. You know,
it's a great idea.
So just another way that you don't have to remember their name because you can see it, you know, go back there, you know, on their name tag as well. Well, listen, as we close, I was going to say, name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. Speaking of words, I want to ask you, what is your phrase? What is your what is your philosophy of life? What is it that you live by that's a magic word or words for you?
Wow.
Surprise.
Perhaps you could have warned me of this earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know. Keep laughing, folks. We got to keep laughing. Humans can laugh for a reason. We're the only creatures on earth that laugh. And there's a reason for that, because we're usually pretty silly and pretty stupid. So let's just keep laughing at ourselves and laughing at others. And wait, that didn't quite sound right. But
laughing with others, maybe. How's that?
Laughing with others. That does sound better. And, it's laughing. Great to be alive, isn't it? To quote Frank Zappa, he said some other word there too.
Yeah, it's the alternative to be above ground when you wake up in the mornings. That's
exactly.
Right.
So let's keep laughing, shall we?
Let's do that. Yes. And I look forward to many years of laughing with you then, Jeff. It's great. Thanks very much for being
my guest.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks for all you've done for Magic. These podcasts are great. They've really helped a lot of people, and I hope to be among that crowd.
I'm sure you will. A lot of good stuff that we talked about here today, and it's worth, I think, a second listen for people hearing this. Be sure to go back and pick it up again, because you've got some really good advice that you had shared. So thanks very much, Jeff. I appreciate you being my guest and also being a friend. That's the advantage. I love just doing this, because I just turn on the microphone and chat with friends, and it's just great. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
The Magic Word Podcast from Chicago. From his basement, the basement boy. There he is, Mr. Jeff Bibbick, and this is Scotty out.
So. Boy, that wasn't hard, was it? Huh.
Thank you, Jeff. That was fantastic. I appreciate the time you gave us for sharing your experiences and giving us some advice and insight to what you're doing. Indeed, you are a bar magician extraordinaire. You've been doing such a great job there at the Chicago Magic Lounge. Keep it up. I know that Joy Cranford's got a great thing going there. And if any of you have an opportunity to be in Chicago, you need to make sure that part of your stop will be at the Chicago Magic Lounge. Great place to visit. Highly recommend it. You will enjoy it, and you'll come back every time you go to Chicago, and you'll recommend this to your friends as well, I'm sure. Well, listen, again, I want to thank everybody for coming in and tuning into this week's episode, and I also want to thank everyone who had registered for the contest for a copy of Al the Only's book, The Magic Graveyard, and now is the time we're going to announce that winner. And the winner's name is Jim Jorgensen. Congratulations, Jim. Thank you very much for entering the contest, and that copy of the book will be going out to you shortly. Compliments of Al the Only, and enjoy the book. This is something I know is going, as Al mentioned last week, is going to be updated from time to time, because as the years pass and people do also, and they are put in the graveyard, they also have to be put into the book. So this has to be updated from time to time, as Al had mentioned, again, in the podcast there from last week. So this, again, has been just a wonderful time that we've had to share with one another. I thank you very much for doing that. I want to remind you that we do have this available over on YouTube. So if you want to see the video of this, plus also there is a little bonus section towards the end of the video that gives you a little tour that Jeff gives us of his basement, of a few of his items that he has collected that are magic items relating to the bar. Anyhow, kind of a fun and funny little thing. Be sure to go over to youtube.com/Texas Magician and look for that video. And also, I would suggest while you're there, might as well subscribe. So this way that you get to know when we do have new episodes that are coming out on YouTube. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and let's keep laughing. This is Scotty out.